You are Locked On Pacers.
Your Pacers fans, Indiana happy Pacers Monday. Podcast. Welcome into a part of the happy Locked with a Vic injury Network. Episode of your the Locked On Pacers podcast. Day. We're doing our weekly show today. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News. And if it's a weekly show, that means on the other line is Adam Friedman. Adam, what's up?
That was a poor intro with the happy because Vic was hurt, but they won kind of thing. No, I mean, you're excited they won because
they won without Vic.
Yeah, but they played the Hawks. I mean, the Hawks are like the worst NBA team, right?
Yeah, probably.
I mean, they're the worst team in the league, I think, right, record-wise, or is their team worse?
I think they have the worst record. Them or the Suns?
I mean, they start a bunch of guys who are basically G League players and then Trae Young, right?
No.
Well, let's see. Poitras, an NBA player. Len, Young, Bazemore are the only two who are really NBA players. The rest, I don't know.
I did not know Taurean Prince was hurt. That changed everything. My
that changed everything.
That changed everything. He's our third best player.
The third best player on a team.
Taurean Prince.
Whose best player probably would barely crack the rotation at any average NBA team.
Hey, he'd be okay. I'd like him over Victor.
All right. Okay, we do this a lot, but let's do this before we start talking about Victor's injury. How many players on the Hawks would crack the Pacers rotation today? How many?
Okay, Jeremy Lin.
Yes.
Trae Young, probably.
Maybe. I don't know about Trae Young. I don't know if he would.
John Collins.
Okay. And Bazemore, right?
Probably Bazemore. Yeah, that's it. Four.
Well, I'm not with
him. Five.
Vince, you think would?
No, Prince.
Prince. Okay. I was like, whoa.
Five. I don't think any of them would start.
Yeah. I'm not sure Trae Young would even make the rotation, to be honest.
The Hawks just haunt me because seeing John Collins, who got picked one spot after Leaf, be their best player already is so frustrating.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about the rookie for the Pacers in a little bit. Should we start with Vic, though?
I have a Vic take for you.
All right, bring it to me.
I'm sad he got hurt more, possibly, but I wish he just didn't play so they could have won a game without him. And they gotten their first sans Vic victory.
Yeah, that's similar to what I was thinking. Like, why did they even play him, to be honest? I mean, I know I saw on Twitter, right, they said he was hurt, and somebody was like, why did they even play him tonight? I think Caitlin said this, like, just let him rest. They're playing the Hawks back-to-back. Like, you know, obviously need him next week because they have a tough week coming up. Like, why even play him?
With game-time decisions like that, and I have no idea. I have no insight on how they do this, but I always wonder if it's, like, the doctors telling him he can or can't play, or he's telling the doctors he can or can't play. Because I feel like Vic – my personal guess is, I saw his videos shooting around and stuff, is that he shot around, felt okay, told the doctors he could play, and then when he fell into the cameraman, it hurt a little more or something, and he's like, okay, I'm done.
Staff to sort of, I mean, I understand that he's your best player, and so it's hard to tell him no, but like, it's on the coach to say, okay, do we need him tonight? No, we really don't. We're playing the worst team in NBA. Right. We've got a good enough team, like, Vic, you're going to rest tonight. Like, you're going to rest back to back. You're just going to rest. I don't care what you say. You're hurt, whatever. It's better off for you to get, you know, 3 days rest before the Jazz game, who we definitely need you to beat. If we're going to beat them, we need you to be there. So that's where I think the issue was. Like, no matter what, the minute he says, I'm kind of hurt, you just say, you're not playing. We're playing the Hawks. You're sitting on the bench it's fine. Nobody thinks you're weak or anything. We're just not going to play you.
That's fair. I can live with that. I just assumed they put the decision in his hands. With how short of time he actually ended up playing in the game, because it didn't seem like anyone was worried that he got hurt worse. You know, any like JJ and Pat Boylan and all the guys who reported that he missed the rest of the game just said like, yeah, he bumped it and he'll miss the rest of the game. Like, nobody said it got worse. I think they were just like, okay, he shouldn't have played at all.
Well, maybe that is sort of like in not trying to scream fire and kind of see it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
We'll find out eventually. Like, maybe we're recording too early in the day, and later they'll be like, "It's torn ACL."
No, I don't think torn ACL, but I mean, he had an injury last year. He missed six games last year, and they went 0-6 in them. So I mean,
seven.
No, that they he didn't play last game. That's why they went 0-6.
That's right. That's right. You're right.
I know my paper stats from last
year. Dang, Adam. I knew the stats. I just didn't think of the reasoning.
We did a lot of paper podcasts last year, and I remember pretty much most moments. Like, it's one thing my memory remembers is that kind of stuff. But so like, the problem, like, if he is even tweaked it for like a week, so like, I mean, I don't think it's a major injury. Like, he's gonna be out for a long time, or whatever. But if he's even out a week, they're probably gonna go 0-3 because they play three decently good teams. The Hornets maybe they could beat, but I doubt it without him. Yeah. So that's why it's like, I'm just kind of annoyed that he played. But if at the end of the day, we could be overreacting right now and he could be end up playing Monday and be fine. So, you know, not much to it. But
yeah,
you could tell he was hurt based on Friday.
Until I hear he made it worse by playing in the Hawks game, I'm not going to be upset about any of that. But we'll see Monday, I guess. And if he doesn't play, they just have no shot against the Jazz. The Jazz smoked him at home last year. We'll get to that later.
All right. He played in both games, right, against the Jazz?
Yep. They won in Utah.
Yeah. That was when the Jazz were on that, like, 6-16 run.
Yeah. When they went on that. No, Gobert was out, wasn't he?
Yeah, Gobert was out, and Mitchell was just starting to become a player.
Anyway, unrelated. But, yeah, you're right. I think maybe the coaching staff should nudge him more in the please don't play direction. But if they gave him the decision and he said he could go, I feel like you have to be like, okay, we gave you the decision for a reason.
I'll tell you what, though. He's had a rough go with this season. I mean, he's played really well, but, like, he had bronchitis for, like, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Then he hurt his knee. Like imagine if he could just finally be healthy for, like, a solid month, how good he would be. Wow. Considering he's already, you know, I mean, he was fighting bronchitis when he beat the Celtics in that game-winning three. Like, he just needs to, like he almost needs a week off just to, like, recoup and recover. Luckily, I mean, you would think that 4 days off last week maybe helped him, but maybe that was actually not good for his knee. I don't know.
Someone said it might not be good. I forget who it was. I was like, that's a good point. Here's the cloud hanging over my head, though. He was bad against the Heat. Like he played okay. Yeah, but, you know, is it like a substantial enough injury that he's a worse player? Like, he had 8 points and did not look particularly good at anything besides hitting one clutch three.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, it's kind of, then DC has injury last year where his knee, and he played really bad every time his knee hurt and then played well, and you kind of tell what night, based on his knee injury, how he was going to have each night, and then he eventually got it cleaned up a little bit. But, I mean, the good part is they really didn't need him this weekend. I mean, in terms of, like, everybody else stepped up. I mean, Tyreek had a great game on Friday and stepped up huge. Against the Hawks, it was kind of a little bit of everybody. I mean, we'll talk about Aaron Holland in a minute, but then Bojan, took up at 22. Like, I mean, the team is definitely – we had this whole conversation last week about how he needed number two, and they're kind of propping him up right now almost too. They're kind of now they kind of all stepped up this week and playing well. So I guess we have to see Monday how he plays to really get an idea of his injury. Was that he played back because of the injury or just played back? Because, you know, he does have those games, you know, every 5-6 game, he does have this game where he goes 3-12, whatever. I mean, he took less shots. Usually it's like his bad games are like 7-20. So he still gets 20 points. So he must've knew he wasn't not right. And kind of not taking as much shots, I think part of it. But I don't know. At the end of the day, I think we have to figure out the Jazz game where he's at before we kind of evaluate whether this is a symptom of the injury or just a bad game and a tweak injury and kind of a combination of just everything happening at once. And then he kind of gets back and he's fine.
The Heat always have weird games. I feel like the Pacers Heat always games are weird. Like, Olynyk did the thing. And last year they had the game where they were like 0-16 from three. And then this year Vic is terrible. And Tyreek is just like, all right, finally, I'm going to show up this season. Like, it's always something weird.
Well, I think Tyreek also had, from the 4 days that the Pacers were off, it kind of, there'd been a bunch of little stuff out there about how bad he's been. I mean, I don't know if he reads the little Pacer blog stuff, but, like, I don't know if anything major in the indie starting like that, but it seemed like there was kind of this question about his play. I mean, he probably just knew it personally. Like, I played bad this weekend against Houston, and I probably got it bad against Philadelphia. I feel like he just knew he played bad. And so he kind of stepped it back up again. And, you know, when you see Tyreek at, like, I mean, that's what we saw as the Heat, was Tyreek at, like, his very best and what he really could be if he could, like, whether it's consistency or opportunity, whatever it is, like, that's the Tyreek they signed.
So yeah.
They won when they signed him.
That was he was awesome. Like, like good is not the right word, because you didn't say good.
He was the best player against the Heat.
Oh, he was absolutely the best player in that game. He was so good. He was hitting pull-up threes. He was dictating passes to Sabonis. Remember that one where he jumped up and, like, somehow curled it between two defenders to him? I was like, man, how did he do that?
He might have been. He's probably the best player on the court. I mean, I would say Richardson had a pretty good game too. But, like, he was probably the best player on the court that day.
Yeah, he was good.
So, I mean, and that's kind of the level that no other Pacer has the ability to do, except for him, is to kind of actually be the best, to actually supplant Oladipo for a game, not for a long, for a game, as the best player on the court. Like, he's the only one that can really do that on the team.
And the reason it's important to talk about that is because Vic's now hurt. So maybe, you know, against the Jazz, we'll need something like that.
Yeah, should we turn positive and talk about Aaron Holiday?
We should. That was amazing.
His game, talking about
the stones on a rookie to just dribble down on your first possession, checked in, and just drill a pull up three. I was like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, I think that confidence comes from, one, pretty confident in your shot, two, playing with other NBA, like, having his bros in the NBA. So he kind of has this, like, he's been around, I'm assuming he's been around NBA players a lot of his life now because his brothers play and he probably goes to hang out with them in the summer or work out with them, you know, that kind of stuff. So I assume that's part of it. But, I mean, I don't want to overreact to this because it's against the Hawks, and I want to say it's a better team, because, honestly, the Hawks, I mean, you disagree, but I think the Hawks would have a tough time against Duke, to be honest, because Duke has three awesome players. But
I think you're right that it's hard to balance like the feeling of like hopefulness and eagerness to see him more with like, okay, one, it was one game, and two, they played the Hawks. But it's so cool because like he literally won them the game. Like,
yeah, he did. And what it shows is that they need to find minutes for him. Or at least next year, it shows they're going to find minutes consistently for him next year. Like that, I mean, you kind of tweeted us not to overreact, but this is him playing well is sort of the downfall of Darren Collison with this team ultimately. Uh-huh. Like it might not happen this season, but it, you know, if Holiday comes in every few games and gets hurt and plays like this, or maybe he's up and down, has a couple good, a couple bad ones, he's eventually going to sort of like, there's going to be this thought of like, all right, we're just going to play him over. We're going to get rid of Collison next season and play him. Now, I would love Holiday was able to play consistently like 10 minutes a game and really just work through his, you know, as a young player and get a year development ahead of what he should before next year. But I'm not sure there's room for him on this team, which is sort of an issue with this team. You know, there's not a ton of room for development for younger guys, which is Leafs' whole issue.
So here's my kind of solution to that, but it's not good enough. Say hypothetically Leafs, what, 5-6 minutes a game? You just move everyone on the second unit up a position and have Holiday run with Kodjo, Tyreek, and McDermott and Sabonis. Then you can you could probably squeeze him in for 6 or so minutes a game doing that. But that's the only way I can think of finding him time.
So Leafman has 9 games, played 7 minutes a game probably.
Okay. And he had that one game that inflates that where he played in the fourth quarter and actually was pretty good.
Also thinking maybe you could shave Collison down to 24 minutes and that's how you steal about 5 minutes a game for him.
Yeah, then you could get Holiday to like 8 to 10, which that is possible.
And then what you do is if Holiday's playing well, you just ride him.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So then occasionally he plays 15, like you did tonight. Like, you know, you just let him go out there if he's playing well. If he's playing bad, you kind of have a leash kind of on him where you're like, okay, you play bad, we'll pull you out. But if you're playing well, maybe you do it against worse teams. So, like, when they play the Hawks again, when they play the Magic, when they, you know, kind of games where you get away with playing a player of his caliber who can make a mistake and you're not completely screwed because you're playing a pretty bad NBA team.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there's a way to find him, not anything big, but enough minutes to not, like, feel like you're wasting his rookie year.
Yeah, because I think – because remember, he also is a little older than rookies. He played 3 years of college. He's 22. So he is like
– he's older than Lee.
In terms of size, he's developed. So he doesn't need that year in the league to just go to the weight room and work out constantly to get kind of – he is kind of up to size-wise. It's about now just getting minutes and kind of seeing the game and seeing, you know, how to play the game, where you can succeed, kind of that, what mistakes he makes to learn from and stuff like that. That's where he's at. Where Leaf – was that first year was in that stage of like, he needs to get bigger so he can be on the court. Yep. Even like Holiday can be on the court. He clearly is fast enough to be on the court. He has a good enough shot to be on the court. It's just now, can he be consistent enough to stay on the court?
Can he take care of the ball? Can he stay in front of his man on D? And can he be consistent? And well, we have no idea, but I mean, that was a great first starting point.
And I mean, if he can keep hitting those kind of threes, I mean, he's
off the dribble, man. Like that's what makes Tyreek so dangerous is you have to be on him all the time. So you can just pull up and hit it.
I mean, theoretically, if you replace him with Collison at some point and keep Tyreek there, that's a pretty lethal lineup. If you have him, Tyreek, and Oladipo out there, like what we saw in the small spurts.
Yeah. And maybe not to the extent I do, but agree with me. Like the notion that Collison should immediately be like dumped from the rotation so Aaron Holiday can play. Silly.
I think you could cut his minutes. So I think you could cut Derek Collison a little bit of minutes. Cause I think he'd be okay with it. You could justify it as, you know, Collison is a pretty, when he plays less minutes, he's more efficient per se. So I think you could justify it. I don't think they're going to be perfectly healthy all year. Like, I don't think you're going to see, you know, so far, literally what we've had, no top 9 guy missed a game yet, except for the suspension to Tyree. Oh, and we had Sabonis 1 game. And then
you're right.
I forgot. That was it though. Of the top 9 guys who actually play, they've missed a combined 2 games. And let's be honest, it's not going to last for the entire year. I mean, that's just not probably possible. So he should, as much as we kind of want Sumner to be the next guy up, I think Holiday now is the next guy to take the rotation minutes.
Honestly, both of them I feel like need it. But if Holiday means that you can keep Sumner on his two-way the whole year and then have him be a restricted free agent next year, then that's good too.
I guess the question is, because this team kind of made this run this year of setting a 9-man rotation to kind of like make a deep playoff run, if they say lose in the second round, do they just, you know, make a complete youth turn? Like, is that what the move is for you?
About it. I don't know though, because you know how much it would help them in spending in free agency next year if they could count on Holiday being a backup point guard or count on Leaf being a backup four? Like, that is
– Well, I don't think Leaf is going to be the guy. I'm talking to Holiday and Sumner.
And Sumner.
Well, I'm thinking like you could get rid of Joseph and Collison, but like,
oh no, I'm not that confident.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm not that confident either. I guess you know, when you said on a previous podcast that this was the year before they figured out how to build around Vic, right? This is the year before they made the big moves of Vic. I guess what they really also did is they kind of cut off the rookies from having a chance. And I know you can't predict what Sumner and Holly were going to do, but like basically by getting 9 quality players, they basically cut off anybody, young guy, having a shot of really playing.
That's which the is trouble sort of disappointing. Like the Warriors haven't had a good rookie in 7 years.
But the problem is they're not as good as the Warriors. They're like a notch below. And so they
let's go a peg down. The Heat before Bam Adebayo hadn't had a good rookie in forever. Like good teams just don't have good.
Whiteside, there was like a third year guy when they brought him.
Whiteside was undrafted. They got him from the G League.
Yeah, but he was the young guy. I'm just saying that I guess in terms of like the Pacers need one of the young guys to have actually a shot at competing. Right? They need Aaron Holiday to become a really good player, really have it. Like at least that's the easiest path to becoming like an NBA final contender, right? If Holiday becomes one of these like top 10 point guards next to Vic and you got Turner as a bonus, like that's a real team that's really good. So, you know, them kind of cutting off the rookies actually cuts off their easiest path to success. Let's put it that way.
Well, is it their easiest? It might be their most unlikely as well. Like they have.
Well, I don't know. It's. I mean, the paths to getting good are always zigzagging, right? You don't actually. I mean, like you know, it's a random free agent here, or it's getting like a Whiteside, for example. Like you know, you don't know who's going to become good. Like the Celtics, you know, they made the trade for Fultz basically for Tatum, and who knew that was going to work out the way it did, and kind of things like that. Are you able? You ever get enough money to go get Hayward one summer? Like it's zigzagging, but at some point, you know. If Holiday was to pop, that's the easiest way to build it, right? It's through the draft. That's why teams tank. It's the easiest way to actually build contenders through the draft.
Yeah, it is. And like that's what the Warriors did. They drafted 3 great dudes. And now they're the best. The
Pacers do a really good job of drafting guys late. I mean, think about it.
They do.
Turner's an 11th pick. I know they didn't draft Bones, but he's in what, a 10th pick? In the 11th past. Also. He's 11th also. So I mean, those are 2 guys who are late round picks who I count Spoelstra as a draft pick is kind of they traded for him. They traded as like a draft pick. That's kind of was the throw in draft pick from the Paul George trade. And you know, Holiday drafted late enough, like could he become something like you know
Sumner, second round, Alizé, second round.
Yeah, I guess at some point, just how do these guys crack minutes? I guess is the question. I don't know if we have an switched at this moment, but it's I guess I'm worried they might not ever get a shot.
Yeah, the thing too, like I wonder if when they got all these guys, they were like, no way, all these dudes we just acquired. In our first year of a rebuild are going to be really good. And then they were all really good.
Yeah. And they also, I mean, they've been fortunate with injury luck too, right? Like I said, guys haven't gotten hurt this season for an extended period of time. That would, you know, if Miles Turner had a 16-game injury again, period end, it would probably get Holiday minutes because you could shift the lineup around or whatever. You know, you could figure out how to play him more. So that's the kind of things that they've been fortunate so far. So I guess it's kind of a good problem to have right now, right? At some point it becomes a bad problem, but right now it's good.
Exactly. You are correct. I have nothing more on the matter. I'm very happy for Aaron Holiday. That is my more on the matter. Great game.
Do you want to do a break and then do our like little mini segment before we preview the games?
Yes, I would love to. So the new thing is discussing changes to the starting lineup. Everybody wants some change, it seems like. And it seems like we should talk about that.
Yeah, we should. You wrote a nice, you were not wrote, you, well, I guess wrote, maybe wrote it, typed out a nice little thread on this, right, on Twitter the other day?
Yeah, the slow starts have been a big topic of discussion, and rightfully so. I mean, digging out of a hole every game is less than ideal. And what I found that, I know a lot of it could be noise, it's been 15 games, but some of it is that in the first quarter, the starting five is conceding 45% three-point attempts, you know. Like, why is the other team shooting so well from three? So then you have to look into why. Well, why are the Pacers not scoring well and giving up all these three-point attempts? It's because they don't run through Vic as much in the first quarter. Well, why not? Well, they're saving him for the end of game. So it's a lot of digging anyway to say that, like, they just run their offense differently and it makes them get worse looks, which on the other end gives the other team easier looks. And you need to find, you know, if you really believe that can be fixed as easily as a starting lineup change, then, yeah, you need to find a way that to either A, get better looks on offense without going through Vic in the starting five, or B, defend the perimeter better when you're going to have all these misses with the starting five.
Yeah, so like, for example, just like a real-world example, they lost the first quarter to the Heat by 9 points, ended up winning the second quarter by 16, and then against the Hawks, they were down 9.5. So, I mean, those are two, right now, yeah, 9.5. So those are two times where the team started off really slow and take their way back. Now against the Hawks, they held them to 33 second half points, so that will help you win any game. And then the Heat, they had a great second quarter that kind of brought them back. And so you know, there's this pull of like, you want to not start off down 10 points, but you also don't want to use Vic all of his energy in the first quarter because you need him late in a close game. And they need kind of to run the offense through somebody else, right? They need another offensive player. And so when Tony and I were brainstorming this segment, you know, we were working through it. I think one of the solutions we had was kind of to change the starting lineup, but we didn't want to hurt the bench unit enough. We didn't want to drag it down too much because that's also been helping them a ton, is it's a really good bench unit. And we'll
talk about why it would hurt the bench unit too, because that's just as important.
Because basically the bench unit, if you take Sabonis out of it, you basically take out of their offensive like go.
Yes.
Basically, you take out the most important offensive
piece. So much.
Yeah, because if you watch a lot of the bench unit, it's Sabonis cleaning up Tyreek misses a lot of times or getting kind of the last second pass on Tyreek. Like a lot of Sabonis off the bench unit is just kind of being the facilitator, or like kind of just being there and making stuff happen, I guess, you know, either on the pick and roll, whatever it is, he's kind of there. Versus if you take him out, then you're putting Turner in that role, and Turner just isn't as good as the offense Sabonis is. It's just a fact. I mean, Turner's got his other strengths defensively, but offensively, just not as good. And with the bench unit, you want offense because the idea is that the goal is just to score as much as possible and keep, like, maintain the lead, right, or maintain the close game. So you're okay trading buckets for buckets. So the idea, you know, we were talking about is, well, if you do that, you can't really put Turner in the bench unit. So I was saying, what if you made a complete lineup shift, just like radical change, and went put Joseph and Sabonis in for Turner and Collison, where that brings you Collison's offense to the bench, which he would be really good at. Tyreek, I think. I still think Collison would be a really good bench player, to be honest. I think he fit, you know, I remember seeing flash of it last season when he got from the injury. I thought he'd be really good at the bench. He just like, he allowed him to just kind of flourish offensively to take any shot he wants. And he's a pretty decent offensive player if you kind of give him the opportunity to kind of control an offense. And you throw Turner in there too, because then you kind of bring the defensive edge. And then you kind of, you're balancing out. And then obviously with the starters, you bounce it back where you got good perimeter D with Joseph running guys off 3-point shots, but then you still have the offensive impact of Sabonis with Oladipo. You can run the offense through him at times to start the game.
Yeah, I like the double switch more than either of them individually as a switch. Because, you know, people always are now it's becoming screaming. So I'll just say screaming about, you know, we have to have Sabonis in over Turner. He's a better starter, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, here's the thing. Turner is good with the starters because of how bad Bojan and DC are on defense a lot of the times. You know, he helps bail that out and make it not as terrible. So if you just switch that, you know, is the offensive improvement, A, does the offensive improvement alone cancel the defensive improvement? I'm not sure. And B, now Turner's with the bench where he would be less effective. So I think that individually does not help the team. But if you switch Kojo also, now you can get away with Sabonis's D. You mitigate a lot of the problems with three-point defense you have with the starting five because they're missing a lot of shots, not running through Vic. And then the bench still has another creator next to Tyreek in DC, and Turner could still help DC out with his bad D by being there. And the Pacers really don't even close with the starting five or go back to starting five hardly ever besides the start of the third quarter. So it's not like it would be a drastic change to anything, but I think the double shift, if you do anything, is the best way to do it. I still don't want to do anything though.
So this also would help Sabonis maybe actually. I've been on this train. I'm going to keep playing. I think Sabonis should play 30 minutes a game or close to it. Just because if you look at his offensive impact, if he could play like, I mean, now again, this is barring his getting foul trouble, which, you know, he does every other game. So I understand that. But like, if he could play 30 to 32 minutes the way Vic does, I think Sabonis could put up like close to 20 a game. And so starting him allows you to kind of do that more because you can keep him in longer at the end of the first and the end of the third. You can bring him in earlier, whatever it needs. But then on the other side too, when you bring in Joseph instead of Collison, I think this is actually the more logical change in general is going to come soon enough, is that Joseph's just been a better player than Collison. And it almost seemed like it's time for him to start over him, just because Collison's not shooting. I mean, he got 3-point percentage up a little bit to 37%, give or take. But when he's not shooting 48% from three, he's not as effective a player. I mean, it's just a fact. I don't know else how to put it. And Joseph just defensively brings way more to the table. He's shooting really from three so far this year. And he's not as much of a drop offensively when you consider the fact that Collison is not shooting as well, because then he's more actually valuable as a spot-up shooter than Collison is.
Yeah, he has shot crazy good this year.
44%.
Yeah. Well, and I like even in general, because I remember when they – the beginning of the Hawks game wasn't going so good and Kojo was in, but he came in for Vic. And it was like his second possession in, and he took like a turnaround fadeaway jumper over Kent Bazemore, and it went like 100 like miles turner height in the air, and it somehow went in. I was like, man, he's just making everything right now.
He's playing really well in it. I mean, yeah. I understand I'm not sure how much value he has actually playing with the bench versus like the drop off of value. You know what I mean? So if you switched him and Collison, I'm not sure there'd be a drop off with the bench unit as much as we think.
Here's another just thought for your brain. Sometimes Corey Joseph is frustrating when he's just dribbling too much. And I think everybody's seen that before. He takes an ill-advised floater. When they are starting five, when they are doing that thing where they don't run through Vic as much to try to save him, if they are running through Kojo, that would be not good.
Yeah, I would agree. But I think that's why we were talking about doing kind of the both thing where you could, because you could run the Joseph Sabonis kind of offense through those two guys essentially. But I mean, also the thing is you could allow it just to play off the ball. So instead of Vic, you might have his break up a little bit, but you're running an offense where he kind of kicks it out, and then he has two guys to kick it out to all the time. And actually, with Sabonis, you run a pick and roll with Oladipo and Sabonis, right? Get the 4-on-3 Sabonis. That's a more effective 4-on-3 when you've got Kojo and Bojan sitting in the corners, the DC and Bojan, because he's just a higher three-point shooter.
Right now, he is, yeah.
Yeah, right now. I mean, I don't know if that's real
or not, but right now he is, yeah.
Well, I don't know. We're 16 games in, so like it's a real sample size now. It's not like it was, you know, a couple weeks ago when we were 8 games, which who knows, 8 game stretches.
Well, 33 versus 32 attempts. Like, it's if Kojo makes one less and DC makes one more, they have the same number of makes this year.
Really? Is it that close? I mean, in terms of percentage?
12 to 14.
Okay. I mean, but, yeah, okay, that's probably a fair point. I just think the game-wise sample size is enough. And Kojo was shooting almost 50% from the field while Collison was shooting 45, which is a huge – and they're shooting – Kojo shooting less shots, so that's could be why. But maybe you could flip that where Kojo gets 8 shots a game and DC gets 5 a game or 5.8 a game.
Yeah, I could live with that.
Just because there's certain things here where the more efficient player is shooting, we'd be better off. Like I said, with this,
Holiday, Sumner, Alize, Leaf, O'Quinn, and then just berate the other team with a great bench.
Like you know what's the craziest stat we have on this team right now? Sabonis is taking only 8 shots per game. Sabonis, the guy who's shooting 68% from the field, is by far the second best offensive player on this team. Third best. Okay, Tyreek, fair. I mean, who the second most consistent offensive player every night.
Okay, I can live with it
that way. Every night is literally probably in the midst of like a career season, right? Sabonis is almost at double-double per game, and he's only taking 8 shots a game and playing 24 minutes. Like, that's insane. Like, how is Sabonis not getting 12 looks a game? I mean, he makes almost anytime he set up down low, he gets a good look. He can make it.
His usage is real high.
No, but it's minutes wise. He's only playing 24 minutes. If you played 30 minutes, he would.
They're giving him the ball a lot. Eight shots is a result of him being a good and willing passer.
That's fair.
Gets the ball a fair amount, but he is great out of the pick and roll at finding the next guy. Like, they throw it to him in the post and he dishes to someone else. Like, yes, he should shoot more because he's efficient, but he's also shooting really well because he's good at picking his shots.
Yeah, he also doing a lot of cleanup for guys.
Yes,
that. A lot of rebounds for people. I'm just saying, I hate to like make this the Turner Sabonis thing once again, and it really shouldn't be, but it should just be pointed out how good Sabonis is playing this year offensively. Like, it just has to be looked at. Like in take out the whole Turner part, Sabonis having a great year in any system should be rewarded for having that great year. Offensively,
a fantastic year,
right? I know what you want to say, Terry's the second best offensive player on the team, but consistency wise, Sabonis is there every night. You know, every night he's 14 and 10, it feels like. If not, sometimes he's like 12 and 16, like he was against the Hawks.
Yeah, he has been good. No qualms with that.
Yeah, he's been really good. I just think he deserves more minutes, is all, in my opinion, but I don't know.
I would love that if you could find a way to not foul enough to get more minutes.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing is can he what's he averaging fouls per game? I think he's almost at he's at 3 per game.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Turner's at 2.8, just below 3
per game. He only plays half the game.
Yeah, so he only plays half the game half the time because he keeps getting in foul trouble.
Yeah, that's fair. Is it really 3 per game? I thought it was more. No, it's 3. Wow,
it's 3. Turner's at 2.8.
Wow, that's so bad.
Yeah.
That is a problem.
That's a huge problem. I mean, that's his biggest flaw, right? Is he just can't stay on the court.
Yeah, defensive positioning, he's just not in the right spot. And
but that's why he fouls.
Right.
It's all a symptom of a problem is basically what it is.
Yes.
I just think they should get more minutes for him is all. I'm on that train. I'm going to keep harping that train every week until I see it.
But the other thing, too, is some of those 24 minutes are with Turner.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I'm okay playing him with Turner. You started him, you could play him more like 30 minutes again because you could play him with Turner more is all.
Hopefully. That'd be the plan.
Yeah, I'm not advocating for this Turner or Sabonis. They've been playing pretty well together in the right lineup, so just play more of those then. Just get him on the court more because he's been so good offensively. I want him on the court.
Yeah.
Like, even if it turns out their Sonis opponents can still be effective because you can somehow get switches because they can put the smaller guy of a center-wise on him or something like that. Like, you can figure it out. Like, I would love to see kind of a Turner Sabonis pick and roll type of play or something like that, or switch off-ball pick.
Off-ball handler. He went coast-to-coast in the Heat game. Did you see that?
Yes, I did. That was pretty good.
That was so cool.
Or I'm thinking even like an off-ball pick and switch, you know, where like he cuts around the side and Turner sets a pick for him and gets the switch kind of thing. And so you get like
a handoff.
Yeah, or something. Just something. I mean, they get a little more creative with them too. Like, keep their only court, get creative with them. Because there was that one really good play, but it's Sabonis that made the pass to Turner in the post. Turner
had to dump off to Sabonis, and everybody went right? crazy.
Yeah, that Spurs game. I mean, I put that highlight up for one of my articles I wrote. So I mean, but like, just do things like that. Like, they're actually both pretty good with the ball. Like, Turner could be a little bit with the ball in his hands, but like, they're both decent enough that you could kind of run stuff with them in isolated, kind of smaller vacuum stuff inside the post, stuff like that.
Yes.
I would just love to see that as well. I mean, that's a big thing, right? We should move on to our game period, but it's just creativity because offense is lacking in general, and it's not the player's fault for sure.
We're not moving on to our game period just yet because we have to congratulate Ben Moore on his two-way
contract. Oh, I thought it was at the end of the show.
I thought we were doing it at the end of the segment.
That's fine. We can do it now. That's fine.
Ben Moore got a two-way contract with the Spurs after getting waived two weeks ago. He's playing really good in the G League, so good for him. There's never a spot for him to play with the Pacers, so it makes sense, obviously, why he'd go somewhere else. But I always liked him. Sad to see him go.
Yeah. Like I said, we talked about it in the first segment. There's just a problem with this team and being able to get young guys minutes. And it's not
when he's in the second tier of young guys.
Yeah, I mean, he's a borderline NBA player, right? I mean, he's a borderline NBA rotation player, actually.
Probably. Pop's turning him into someone awesome.
Maybe. I don't know. I think I feel like the Spurs days are numbered just because I think Pop's going to retire soon. But
yeah, me too.
When they make Becky Hammond's coach, it'll be fun.
That will be cool. I am excited for that.
I mean, they have the system. It's like the Pacers we talked about, right? The Pacers, is it the system or is it the coach? Is Pop create a good enough system where it will last beyond him kind of thing?
All right, let's do some game previews after a break. All right, so first up Monday, we got the Fighting David Locks. The Utah Jazz are in town. It'll be a fun one because last year the Jazz decimated the Pacers in Indiana. Do you have the numbers? Or do you want me to do it?
I got the numbers. We should first mention that our overlord boss of the Locked On Podcast Network, really just a good guy, but I'm just making fun of him because he's our boss. David Locke is the Jazz play-by-play guy, so he'll probably listen to this podcast, this one, because for some reason he likes to listen to the Jazz one. So we should save our most ridiculous hot takes for why the Jazz are the worst team in the NBA for right now. Just so you know. actually, the Jazz have not been that great so far this year. So actually, it might not be so bad right now.
Fine. I think that expectations for them were way too high.
And I got to point on that in a second to do the rating. So they're 20th in offensive rating, 14th in defensive rating, and they are 21st in pace. They are 8-8 as we speak right now, 10th in the West. So the expectations thing was, I actually feel like you were part of the reason for this expectation.
I was way high on the Jazz.
Pushing this thing that the Jazz are like the third best team in the West, right? Or the fifth best team in the league last year behind, yeah. To come in and claim that there was two expectations is kind of a little bit, nefarious of you because you've been pushing this high expectation game for all. Since they lost last year to the Jazz, you've been pushing this high expectation thing since that time. I remember we had the conversation over text or off the air, whatever. We've had so many Jazz conversations, and I've been kind of, I think they're good. I'm not going to call them bad, but I think there's sort of a cap ceiling in this new pace and space NBA. And you seem to think, they could be the best team in the league because Gobert is
great. That works.
They're just not going to beat the Warriors. The problem.
No way. Well, here's the thing though. Ricky Rubio is not going to shoot 35% the entire season. Jay Crowder shooting 40%. Donovan Mitchell shooting 41%. Mitchell's a different thing because sophomore slumps do happen. But the other two guys are going to get better.
I don't know. Crowder's been kind of bad going on, since he joined his last year at Boston, joining Cleveland. Like, he shot.
Well, he had his mom died that summer and stuff. I thought that last year was different.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, I'm just thinking that, career-wise, you actually look at – he's only a 43% career shooter overall from the field. So I think we kind of had this myth about it because he had that really good 1 year with the Celtics where he was 46% and 40 from three. And
yeah.
It looked like he was kind of a really good piece, could be kind of fit with a bunch of superstars, could be that piece. And then since then, he kind of regressed to the normal. He had that – I think he was averaging 13 or 14 points a year. He had this good little run under – I guess it was in Brad Stevens' system, which is – maybe why Brett Stevens is such a good coach. But since then, hasn't been able to get back to there, and has aged a little bit too. Yeah, I don't know. The Jay Crowder thing, I've kind of, because I've had the same ideas. I'm like, oh, why didn't Crowder? Like, I would love if Crowder. He's like a 40% 3-point shooter, but really, it's kind of a myth about Crowder. I think. Yeah. I think he had a really good year that kind of taints us all in our minds.
That's fair. Also, shout out to Georges Niang, who has a full contract with the Jazz, and is shooting 39% from three. Where was that when you were on the Pacers, buddy?
Yeah, and playing 8 minutes a game.
Yes, he is. Good for him, man. He's played in every single one for them. That's crazy.
The thing is, he wouldn't even crack the Pacers rotation. I mean, he'd be playing at least minutes. No. Right? He'd be playing at least minutes. Essentially, so.
like 19% here. Not actually, but like something terrible. Like, where was this, man? Come on.
I mean, I don't know. He was a young guy. I mean, that's probably the rookies, right? You can't give up on them so soon because they're just developing. So, you know,
they give him a year and a half, didn't they? A year?
So my roommate freshman year in college, brother, I think, played with Niang somewhere in like high school or something like that. And he was telling me how he was like a hard worker and all this stuff when he got drafted. And I was like, okay, I mean, second round pick, we'll see what happens. And then he got, you know, we texted when he got out of the league. We texted about that when he got hurt and stuff like that. And I just like, I remember him saying that now that he's playing well, maybe he was right. I mean, except anybody, any NBA player that makes it to the league, but like maybe he was right. Maybe he's a hard worker that's sort of working out the kinks in the game.
So I'm going to cheat the discussion and jump ahead to Butcher so I can pick Rudy Gobert and you can't.
That's fine. I don't want to pick Gobert.
Okay. I'm a Rudy Gobert's biggest fan. The man is just incredible on defense. And all he does on offense is catch lobs and dunk, and he's shooting. He leads the league in effective field goal percentage this year. He just puts the ball in the basket, basically. Like, it's underrated how impactful he can be on offense, and his defense is amazing. He's very smart about how far to chase guys out to the perimeter. He dictates where the ball moves. He just roams around the basket and changes the whole game. It's going to be real hard to score well against the Jazz if you're not hitting your shots from 10 feet and farther out. So Rudy Gobert, clearly my butcher, because he can change the game in the biggest way to me.
All right, I'm going to derail this conversation for a second. If Steph Curry is hurt the entire year, can the Jazz, is Gobert the good enough player to have to help the Jazz beat the Warriors in the playoffs?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, I don't know if I believe that. But
without Curry. With Curry, no way.
What about with Curry but without Durant next season?
Let's well, say. I think Curry's better than Durant.
That's fair. No, that's fine. No, I mean,
still no.
So you think, okay, so okay, that's sort of weird. But so let's say next season, let's say Kevin Durant, we buy in the rumor he's going to leave. Can this team compete with the Warriors next season?
Yeah, they're going to have space this summer, so.
Okay, but that's like saying the Pacers have space, which nobody's not.
No, they're probably not close to your right.
They're the same as Indiana, small market.
It's not a fair question.
No, I'm just saying, you know, like, will they be able to even compete if LeBron is able to bring in Kawhi, or I'm trying to think who could, I mean, somebody.
These are unfair questions.
I'm just saying, I mean, I'm just not
Michael trying to, Jordan comes out of retirement.
Okay. I'm just trying to temper your Jazz expectations because you have this huge thing where the Jazz are going to be. I'm like, there's a cap. Gobert is a fantastic player. Gobert is probably top 10 borderline. I don't think he's quite cracked the top 10 yet, in my opinion, but borderline for sure. But the problem is that there's just a cap when you have a guy like Gobert who can't shoot a three, and it kind of caps your team's level in today's NBA is all. It's kind of the same issue where Turner, you know, can't shoot threes and was going to become the best player, it caps you is all. Mitchell can maybe overcome that. That's fair. Maybe Mitchell can be the best player in the league and that will overcome that. But as your best player, Gobert caps you in terms of like the ability to win a championship right now in the current NBA landscape.
I'm not sure because he never has the ball on offense that actually matters.
Didn't basically the Rockets ran him off the court.
No, they didn't.
Well, they ran the whole team off the court. They beat them.
They wiped the floor with the whole Jazz
team. I mean, you could say the Rubio injury, fine. You can sell me that maybe a little bit. But I'm just saying in general, like, because the system of
Rudy Gobert had the ninth highest usage on the Jazz. I'm not saying him not being able to shoot threes is any sort of problem for the team.
No, but the usage thing isn't where his value is. It's defensive impact.
No, but not getting, like, you can't say not having a three-pointer limits their ceiling when he never has the ball.
Well, why do you think he never has the ball on offense?
Because he only finishes plays. He doesn't do anything else, which is very valuable. That's Clint Capella with the best defender in the league.
But probably because they don't trust him to actually have the ball in his hands, too. I mean, it goes both ways. You don't just not give a guy the ball.
Why make him do stuff he's not good at? That's stupid.
But my point of this is because he doesn't do something. Just because he doesn't do something because they don't give it to him doesn't mean that he's good at it. He's not good at it. Like, you're assuming that because he doesn't do it, he might be still good at it. He's just not good. No, they don't let him do it.
And I think it's smart of them to not let him be a three-point shooter.
It just caps him. It just does. It caps him. Yes, as a team. It caps him at like the probably a Western Conference final contender, which is nothing to be ashamed of.
Only one guy who can create a shot for himself very easily outside of a set.
That's fine. I mean, but part of that is because your second best player can't create his own effing shot. That's part of the whole thing. If you want to call him the offensive player, best player on the team.
I never said he could create his own shot.
No, but you talk about this.
Incredibly, incredibly good without doing that.
But you just blame the team for not being able to have another offensive player. Yet they have Donovan Mitchell, borderline, I don't know where you rank him, but a really good offensive player. And so their problem is because their second best player hasn't that ability, and that's why they're capped. Because even if the second best player creates his own shot, they wouldn't be as capped.
Derek Favors with Gobert, and he cannot create
it. Yeah, but you're unrealistically thinking he can get some third guy and create his own shot.
I think the Pacers, why can they not?
Look at the Pacers. They're a team that literally we cannot find a second guy who creates his own shot that Indiana can't. They literally can't. Yeah, they have the team. What?
In one season of the current Pacers team, what do you mean they can't find a guy? They haven't tried to find
him. No, but going on for a year and a half, they've had basically one guy create his own shot, nobody else. I mean, it's just hard to find guys who create their own shot. They don't just grow on trees, Tony. They don't just come in the first round of the draft for you.
I'm not saying any of this stuff. You keep saying these things that I'm not saying.
No, but you are saying that, though. You said
when did I say that these guys are just everywhere?
No, I'm saying you think that you can just get a creator off the street, and it's hard to, is what I'm trying to say.
It is very hard, and I think they're going to have the money to do it. And because they have Gobert Mitchell on their team, they can draw someone big.
I love this conversation because we've done this argument probably like 10 times with each other.
Go Jazz. Beat up on the West, Jazz.
No, and like I said, I'm not trying to say the Jazz aren't good. I'm just saying they're capped, and that's all I'm trying to say. And obviously we have different agreements, and I think part of the problem is Gobert in his level. But yes, he's a fantastic player, and he'll probably kill Indiana because he can destroy Turner, and he'll prevent all people from going to the rim if he's there. And
he can destroy everybody. He is a world's destroyer.
Yeah, he is the best player on the court when you play every team except for like three. And that's the problem, is he just can't get you over that hump. That's the biggest thing.
Oh, well, if that's the problem with players, then I'll be damned. Victor Oladipo's the problem.
Well, no, I'm saying that's not a problem. It's just, it's a fact. I'm not trying to say it's a terrible thing. It's just kind of the fact. I mean, it's what stinks about the NBA sometimes, right? Is that there's just your best player just isn't quite going to get you over. Like, there's only a couple guys that can get you over that hump. Like, there's only, you know, one Steph Curry, one Kevin Durant, one James Harden, one LeBron James. That's it.
I hate to look at it that way. I think that's boring.
I know it's the pessimist in me coming out right now. You brought
I do not like looking at the league that way because there's a lot of other stuff going on.
Well, speaking of guys who someday could be, you know, the best player in the league, maybe, or kind of that kind of player, and who I think will be the butcher of this game, and that's Donovan Mitchell.
That's a good choice. If he shoots 35 times again, you never know.
Yeah, I think he's just I think you're right. He's having a little sophomore slump. I think he, again, had higher expectations coming in the year than they should have had for him, because teams were going to adjust him finally, because they had, you know, the first year he kind of surprised everybody, then teams adjust, then he's got to adjust back, and he will. He's a good enough player to do that. He's still having a great year. I mean, 22 points a game is really good. So, I mean, that's not like knocking him. Percentage-wise, got to get better at that kind of stuff. But he's a good player, and if DC's guarding him, he's going to have a nice day. And if Indiana Oladipo's guarding him, he's going to have a nice day. So.
Yeah, no Vic would make this game impossible to win, basically.
I mean, you would need to start Sabonis and maybe run Sabonis Turner together and have some kind of like just completely just like unique offensive.
That at the three. Let's go full crazy.
I mean, could you do that against this team? I'm trying to think. No.
Maybe no. Who
are they starting? They're starting. Well, okay.
Their starting five is Rube. You know, it's Ingles. So no, it's
it's Ingles, Rubio, Mitchell.
Yeah, go Favors.
Their Favors. So you mean you could get away starting Turner's bonus easily, though? Just saying.
Yeah, you could.
Maybe should do it just if Vic doesn't play. I mean, you could play. That can guard Ingles, right, a little bit.
Oh yeah, that can guard anybody.
What if you put that on Mitchell? That could maybe work.
Dun dun dun. If Vic doesn't play, yes.
Yeah. That's when Vic doesn't play, and then what you do is you tell Thad to just play up on him, and then if he beats you, let Turner protect you.
I like Favors. You can hide guys on Favors.
Oh yeah, but I'm thinking you hide some bonus on Favors.
Yeah, that's fair. If you start to, yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
I just feel like if Vic's out, they're just going to simply slide Tyreek into the starting five, and that's it.
Oh, probably. I mean, that's the go-to move.
Yeah.
Should we talk about the Bojan look-alike copycat of Joe Ingles and Bojan together? Kind of similar players.
Last year.
Oh, I mean, I think Bojan is actually proven to maybe just as good as Joe Ingles, if not better.
Ooh,
now.
I still don't know about that.
Defensively, I don't know. Where's Joe? I think, it's because I watch Bojan every day too, so it's totally different. But like, I think defensively, Bojan has actually not been terrible at times. And So defensive rating, Bogdan's at 108, and Ingles. I mean, this is the people ref one, so it's kind of crap. But Joe Ingles at 110. So
give me Ingles in this one. I'm a big Joe Ingles guy.
That's fair. I mean, I don't know. I think they're very similar players. I actually think Bojan brings more to the Pacers.
Yes.
At times.
Yes.
You know what I mean? He fits what they're doing better.
Off the game than fighting Joe Ingles, which is important for the Pacers. Yes, that is accurate.
They both kind of fit their teams, let's put it that way.
Yes, that is fair. That is 100% fair.
I guess I don't want to pick Bojan as my X factor. So, I mean, I think
it's X-factor hard, man. There's not like a good matchup.
Sabonis. Sabonis is the X factor.
You think so? Who's been playing backup center? Is it just Favors? Do they have anyone else playing center for them? No, not really. Ekpe Udoh plays 5 minutes a game. That doesn't really count.
Yeah, right. I think the lineup, they switch out, and they switch out Gobert for Crowder, I assume, and go kind of small. And
the first sub is, Crowder. And then for probably – he's probably at the four.
Yeah, they sub out Crowder for Gobert and play Favors at the five. I was assuming that they bring in Exum and Burks and Allen and O'Neal.
Yeah, so for the time that they have Favors at center, Sabonis is going to be the guy.
Actually, I think Sabonis could be decent against Gobert if he can bring him away from the rim a little bit.
No one can bring Gobert away from the rim enough to be a changing of the game. He's so good.
I mean, I don't know. I think Sabonis has been a fantastic offensive player this year. And again, he's not getting credit he deserves.
He totally has.
He's not going to be able to like back him down the way he can for small – like. It is most of the time, but I think he can get the pick and roll up top. And this would be the perfect game for pick and pop for Turner, but we'll see if they actually do that.
They worked against the Heat last week, not this week.
I mean, against the Jazz, the second time they played them, it worked in the first quarter, then they got blown in the second quarter. But Peter's bench unit is better. So that's why I was going with the bench having to kind of carry it.
You know that one of Gobert's nicknames is the Gobert Report. I love that.
I mean, I love Gobert, just not to the level you love him.
I can't stop. Okay.
I'm not obsessive over Gobert like you.
I think a bench guards could have a big game in this game. Exum and Burks play off the bench for the Jazz. Exum was hyped up as a good defender out of the draft. I actually have no idea how good of a defender he is.
He played well against Harden in the playoffs last year for a game or two, but I don't really know. Honestly, I don't know.
So really, Alec Burks is the hole, or Grayson Allen, but he only plays 10 minutes a game. But those are the holes you can kind of go at. To get offensive good looks.
So who are you picking as a player?
Tyreek Evans. Okay. I'll be going at those guys. I think that's their best chance. And honorable mention Corey Joseph, because I like the idea of him guarding Donovan Mitchell.
Okay. Do we think they win this game?
Oh, man. At home, you know what's funny is like I want to give them a boost at home and say they could win if Vic plays, but they got smoked at home last year by the same team. But at the same time, that was like when they were peaking last year. If you'll recall, they went like, 26-4 to close the year.
That sounds right. I don't have to stand in front of something. Sure. Yeah.
Which is totally not representative of how talented they are. They're not that good. But you know what? I think the Pacers can tweak this one out just because it's going to be a low scoring game and they're used to winning those.
Yeah. I think if you get it close to the end of the game, Vic can win the game if he's playing. I mean, that's what I think.
Oh, yeah. Big asterisk. If Vic doesn't play, the Jazz are going to win.
Let's just assume all week that Vic plays. That way, we don't do for every game. Which
okay.
Is Vic
okay.
Just because if that they won't, we won't know before this podcast comes out. Then we might, you know what I mean? Right? They probably won't know until game time on Monday. So
yes,
this podcast will be listened to mostly before that, I assume. So we'll just assume Vic's going to play. Doesn't play, well, then everything we say might be useless. But I think they're able to win this one.
It's hard.
I just trust Vic. I got to the point where I just trust Vic in close games. If they keep this game close, they can do it.
And I feel like he didn't play that good in their win last year in Utah. I feel like someone else played really good.
No, he had like 24 points of him, right?
I want to remember that game, but I can't.
I vaguely remember it because they blew him out. They were up by so
they
much.
They killed them. They won by 15. But I feel like I can't remember. I have the thing in front of me. Who do you think it was?
Who killed them? Probably Bojan, right?
Oh, Kerr didn't play in that game.
Huh. Was it Bojan?
No, Thad Young had 17 and Kojo had 15
and Vic had 28. So that's who killed
them. 28.
That's who killed them.
So no Gobert and no Miles. That was a weird game.
Yeah, that was a weird game. Sabonis's first start. No, he started about 10 to 40. No. Some started a lot last year, actually. Sabonis played 30 minutes last year.
Got minutes. Joe Young got minutes. What a weird game.
Yeah. Well, that'd be the kind of game now. This is where Aaron Holiday will get minutes.
Aaron Holiday. Yeah.
Next spot. Much better player than Joe Young, actually. Not to be mean.
17 Al Jefferson minutes, yikes. And they won by 15. All right, let's move on to the Hornets.
let's speed this up.
We went
there's a Colts game in 15 minutes that I want to watch.
Well, we're not going to ooze forever on Rudy Gobert anymore. We could lose on Kemba Walker, who just dropped 60 freaking points against the
Sixers. Yeah, maybe we should eat crow on about not bringing in Kemba to the Pacers.
Goodness gracious, 60 points on the Sixers defense is insane, and they lost.
So I have to say this. In my fantasy basketball league, the guy I was playing, my friend Sam, did not play Kemba Walker this week.
Oh, no.
Granted, you have to lock in the week, and Steph was questionable to start at the end of the week and obviously didn't play this whole week, so he played Steph over him, and then Kemba dropped 60. And I'm still beating him by a lot, but man, that would have been a lot to come. He would have been able to kind of make a huge dent in the lead I have.
So this says a lot about the Hornets and my thoughts on the Hornets, because they've been actually not terrible. Like, their expected win loss is 10-5, even though they're 7-8. They always suck at closing games. It's like the thing,
crazy thing ever. Hence Jimmy Butler's 3-point shot
against them. Every freaking year, I almost said the F word that time. Every freaking year, the Hornets somehow suck at closing games, but are good at other stuff. Anyway, MKG day to day did not play in that Sixers game. That actually would be a big deal if he doesn't play, because he's a pretty good wing defender, and their backups for him, Jeremy Lamb, Miles Bridges, Malik Monk, are okay, but not nearly as good as him on wing defense. So that's actually a big deal for them.
Yeah, the numbers are they're 8th in offense and 13th in defensive rating, which is pretty good. And they are
they are always better than their record. It makes no sense. There's something to that, though.
Yeah, that's why the Pacers are kind of the opposite, where they've been really good in close games because of recently. Pacers probably have similar numbers to them and just been really good at closing out games. That's why they're 10-6 and not 7-8.
Can we just not beat around the bush and both pick Kemba as our butcher?
That's fine. I'm fair with that.
Kemba's 29 been, points a game. Just dropped, again, 60 on one of the best defenses in basketball.
Is that 29 a game? Holy crap.
29 a game.
See, that's not as surprising as the Zach LaVine 27 a game, but that's still pretty good.
It's crazy. Really good. He is a beast. Kemba's awesome. Season this year.
It's worth pointing out that he's doing this in a contract year, hoping to get that. I mean, does he qualify for the designated? No, he has to make an All-NBA team.
He could at the end of the year, but I don't think he will.
But if not, he's still going for the
fullback. Also, way in hell the Hornets would offer it to him.
I don't know. They're kind of crazy.
I guess they do need to keep a star. But
what's the full max you can get then? Like 200 or 190? That's the DN. That's the non-DN max. Yeah, 200. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty. I mean, for a guy, I mean, Kemba got kind of screwed last time, right? Didn't he sign a 4-year, $48 million right before the cap went up? So he's getting paid basically what DC and Bojan are being paid, but he definitely should be paid more like what
Vic. He's like, what did I see? He's the 111th highest paid player in the NBA. Crazy.
Like, even if he shouldn't be being paid, like, Vic is underpaid, we can say, but that's what he should be making. He should be making $20 million a year. I mean, that's how good a player he is. He's worth 20. So, I mean, part of this is Kemba saying, you know what, I deserve. You know, and he'll only be 29. I mean, I know he's a small guy, but only be 29 next year. So, like, giving him a 4 or 5 year deal isn't unrealistic.
The Hornets are a weird team for me to think about, because in a vacuum, every move they make, I've been like, yeah, that makes them better. And then it just makes them okay. Like, Nick Batum seemed like a good acquisition. Jeremy Lamb, Marvin Williams had that good year and they paid him. Like, they drafted Monk, they drafted Bridges, they signed Tony Parker. Like, all these things, I'm like, yeah, okay, that's the right thing to do for them. And then it just never comes to anything more than them being like, okay, at
basketball. Well, honestly, I mean, I know Kemba's been good, but I think part of it is the top player again. Because this team, I would say, is similar to the Pacers. The Pacers are a little better on the edges, but like, it's the top player that has driven the Pacers to farther heights than Kemba has.
Yes.
And that's the biggest problem with Kemba, right? He just can't drive them to the
playoffs. And Batum not being what he was the year before they paid him stupid money, really.
Yeah, but Batum's injury killed them.
Because he was much better before he got hurt,
too. Yeah, no, he was. He was I don't know where he was ranking wise, but he was one of the top 50 of players.
X Factor, dun dun dun. I wish I didn't pick Tyreek last time, because I would pick him this time going against Malik Monk. I will go with Thaddeus Young against Marvin Williams. You keep Marvin Williams away from shooting the three ball, you can really hurt the Hornets spacing. At the same time, Marvin Williams is not a very good defender. Good opportunity for Thad to swing the game.
I think it's probably going to be Turner against Zeller.
Ooh, I will never slander Cody Zeller, but go ahead.
I know. I mean, this is – I was back – when I used to be an Indiana fan, I was a Zeller fan too, so don't worry, before I switched allegiances to my college. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Cody Zeller's not a great NBA player, in my opinion.
He's all right.
He's all right, but he's not anything, you know. He's the sound of eh when you think about him.
I picked him for most improved player just on a whim because he'd be starting. That was a dumb choice.
Yeah, I mean – I don't mean to hate on the Indiana product, because I mean, but he's just, I think Turner can have a field day with him, to be honest.
Yeah, he's third on. He can.
And I think defensively, Turner will have impact on stopping Kemba getting to the rim. Which
you don't have the strike out against Zeller at all. He cannot shoot anything.
Yeah, I mean, I know Kemba's shooting like 10 threes a game, so that's where a lot of points coming from. But if you can run Kemba off the 3-point line and maybe go to the rim, I think you can get Turner to stop more often than not. I mean, he'll probably foul him a few times here and there, but you can get some denies against the glass.
I agree with you on that. I think that's a good pick.
This game, I think you agree with me. I think it's a win. I think even if Vic doesn't play, they still have a chance at winning. This is the one game they have a chance of winning this week, even if Vic doesn't play.
If you slow Kemba down, that's why we pick him as the butcher, right? Like the game hangs in him. If he is just like an off night where he scores like 14 or something, yeah, they could smoke him.
Yeah, I mean, the hope is in this kind of game is that you're able to, with Vic's injury, play him like 20 minutes because you just get a huge lead to kind of run him off. But it's worth noting last time they played the Hornets, or one of the last times they played him, this 149 points.
The Danberg game.
The last time they played in Charlotte, I think they played.
Remember they beat him the second last game of the season in Charlotte.
But that was at home, I thought. No.
No. They closed home and home. Remember?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
So one of the games last year they scored 149 points. So that's worth watching out. Just
it is. Yeah, this will be a fun one. Watch the game in black and white. So you don't have to see the Hornets court, but other than that,
I love the Hornets court. I don't want to argue with you about it, but man,
I love the idea. I don't like how it turned out.
Okay, well, I like when teams try things. I mean, I thought the Heat's vice court was really cool the other day.
I like the court.
And shout out to I don't know who tweeted that. I mean, who tweeted the tweet? But the all red Hickory uniforms, those were cool. That's
Dom hit him up.
That's who it was. Those were cool. They should do that. Cool.
Those are better than the Hickory with the gold shorts.
Yeah, the gold shorts look kind of almost too retro. You know
I did mean? Like that. I will give him a shout out for that too.
The all red is kind of cool. So that's all. Okay. We want to move on to that next game.
My Spurs, who they already beat in, I think, their best performance of the year.
Going for the second year sweep.
That would be insane. So they passed it so well the first time they played the Spurs that if they can do that again, I think they're going to have no problem winning if Vic plays.
Yeah, that's fair. I also think the Spurs, they fit kind of a lull, right? They're 7-7 also.
Well,
they're 500 also, just like the Jazz.
No Bertans, no Gasol. They've been out for a bit.
Okay.
Their post rotation has been very shallow. Jakob Poeltl, LaMarcus Aldridge, and that's like it.
So they're 15th in offensive rating and 16th in defensive rating. So they're about middle of the pack, which is kind of what I was thinking. They're right.
Yeah,
they're
playing Chimezi Metu like every game recently. Okay.
Expected win loss 7-7, just where they're at right now. So they're right on point. I mean, they're a team of DeMar DeRozan, Aldridge, and kind of Rudy Gay.
Yes. If they had Rudy Gobert, they'd be amazing.
Yeah. Okay, Tony. Calm down.
Yeah, and they're relying a lot on DeRozan. He's playing 37 minutes a game.
Wow. That's some Tom Thibodeau level stuff.
I know. That's crazy.
35. Him and Margaret
both playing over 35, yeah.
Well, I wonder if DeRozan doesn't mind it. Like, DeRozan's probably just, I don't know what DeRozan is in his career.
Yeah, he's averaging 6.3 assists, which is big for him. He's not.
He's shooting 50% from the field, too. He's having a good year.
Yeah, he's having a pretty good year. LaMarcus, however, is not having a good year. He is shooting 41%.
Yeah, not so good. But then you got Gobert, but counting back out with 50. So, I mean, yeah, it's balance.
Rudy Gay.
I keep saying Gobert.
Yeah, Rudy Gay shooting 50% from three. That's huge for them.
Yeah, 50% on the field too. I think in this game, the Butchers is either Aldridge or DeRozan, right?
The way it went last time, it was DeRozan in San Antonio. He played pretty good.
Yeah, I think him and Vic
up in front of me.
Him and Vic have a nice back and forth, the way to put it, right? Because they played each other last year. They were the best two players in the East, guards in the East last year. So they just have a nice like going back and forth. I think they bring out the best in each other, honestly.
They do enjoy that. I'm trying to remember how many points he had the first time they played because I feel like he didn't. Yeah, he had 18. He's their leading scorer at 18, but they played a really good defensive game in that game, too. Jakob Poeltl started that game for the Spurs, if you'll recall, and he only had 2 points in 12 minutes. He was not very good.
Yeah, so should we mention, too, on the X Factor side, I guess, that this could be the Corey Joseph's second revenge game?
Yes, he was awesome. Awesome for him is 12 points, but yeah, he was a plus 30. Oh my gosh.
Wow. I didn't know the Pacers won by how much. They went by 20 at the Spurs last time. I totally forgot it was that many points.
They played him. I still think that was their best game of the year.
That was the good Tyreek game. The bench unit. I think the bench unit was the X factor, right?
Well, Tyreek was just okay for three quarters. Then the fourth, he just blew up.
He's 5-7. Yeah, that's where he first got that step. We started seeing that step back three, kind of the James Harden three.
Yes, we did.
But yeah, I think that maybe the bench unit is the X factor actually to pick.
Yeah, some of the starters were minus. DC and Bojan were minuses the first time these two teams played, and then the bench was amazing. And that's a good pick again, especially if Gasol's out, because then they're like Mills, Bellinelli, Cunningham, and a bunch of guys that I've never heard of before.
And we think they'll be out, right? I mean, I guess like, what's this?
I don't know about Gasol. His injury doesn't look like it's that bad on the sheet, but Bertans probably won't play, it looks like.
This is the last game of the week, too, so they could have played by the end of the week.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Will we see Ben Moore play?
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh. I hope
this
so.
This is why I want to do the end of the podcast, because there's going to be a good tie to it, but you kind of...
Dang, I didn't even know that. I'm dumb. You said that, and I forgot.
Kind of blew it, Tony. You blew it just a little bit. I blew just
it.
Just kidding.
I blew it. Yeah, they could use him on the wing. Yes, so this one is weird. Last year against the Spurs was the Vic game. We'll see if that happens again. But
oh, yeah, the one at home. Yeah.
Yeah, I look forward to this one. I just like watching the Spurs. But if they can throw it around like the first time, I think they'll have no problem.
Yeah, so to end this week, if Vic plays, they go over under 1.5 wins.
If Vic plays all three, I'll go over.
Okay, over under 2.5.
Under.
Okay, so they're going to lose to the Jazz with the other two teams, you think?
If you gun to my head, made me pick the two, yeah, I'd pick Hornets Spurs.
Same. I guess I'm trying to figure out whether they're fortunate to play the Spurs early on and the Jazz early enough on that they're kind of in slumps. Like last year, they drew the Jazz really early that one game. That was like a fortunate run to get them then instead of late. And they play the Jazz next Monday too, the following Monday. So if they could hit the Jazz and Spurs in these early season slumps right before they maybe kind of get good to hit a run, that'd be really awesome, because it would kind of – it's four wins that maybe not would have gotten they had late in the year.
Yes, that would be nice. That would be nice, because they are not playing well right now.
No. Neither team. I don't think either Jazz or the Spurs are playing well right now. And I think they will play better, too.
They're playing year. Basically 3 500 teams this year, this week. Like,
They should have. I mean, the Hornets need to actually beat, because it could be a tiebreaker in the future, I guess, technically. I mean, the Pacers. Probably not. Okay.
Maybe.
The Pacers had.
I won't say no, but I won't say yes.
The Pacers followed up a pretty bad week, I think, the last week with a nice week this week.
They two needed wins. Those two. And they were both, like, gritty, if that makes sense. Well,
they just – the thing is about Indiana is they seem to beat the bad teams. They don't seem to just, like, lose a stupid game to me.
That's important to being good, though.
No, it is, 100%. I mean, it's why – what they're 10-6. What does that put them record-wise in the East? I don't know.
10-6, third and East.
Yeah, and so I think they're going to be hanging around in the third and East competition all season, to be honest. Yeah. And we'll see if the Raptors – and Bucks come back to Earth at some point. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know if they will, but like the
Celtics come back to their Earth at some point too, though.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's fair. I don't know. Celtics might take a little more time, even. They don't, but I think the Bucks, I feel like, are not. I mean, right now they're on pace. They're 11-4. So if you check with times five, right? That's like, I see about 80 wins. They're on pace for like 57 wins, give or take.
Yeah, they're playing real good.
I don't know if I believe they're 57 win good. I think they're 50 win good. I don't know if they're 57 win good, but who knows? And the Raptors, same.
They win 57. Jason Kidd should never be allowed to watch a basketball game again.
I think he's already lost his chance of being able to play.
Bud has erased him from ever getting a job.
Man, Bud, I have to say that was some cold blooded move by Bud to kind of like just push his way out of Atlanta to get to where he wanted to be. Like he saw the opening and knew it.
Yeah, good for him, man. All right, you got a Colts game to catch, so.
I do. I want to watch a Colts game, who hopefully will be 5-5 when you hear this podcast.
Wow. Another 500 team to reference on the show.
Hey, this team was bad last year. 5-5 is good.
That's fair. Thank you guys for tuning in. Hopefully the Colts play well, so you can all be happy listening to your Pacers stuff tomorrow. Hope you have a great week. We'll have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week, but we'll be off for both the Thanksgiving holiday times. Yeah, thanks for tuning in. Have a good holiday. If you don't hear from me, but you will. Until then, and yeah, have a great week.